Welcome to the Dads on the Fly podcast. I'm Joshua Simmons. Dads on the Fly is brought to you by Trout Routes, the number one mapping resource for trout anglers. Turtlebox Audio, the loudest, most rugged outdoor speaker. And Catch Cam Nets, where you can build your own net.
And I'm Caleb Simmons. Thanks for joining with me and my brother as we discuss fly fishing, fatherhood, and faith, and the intermingling of it all. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to episode 132 of the Dads on the Fly podcast. I am Caleb Simmons, joined as always in studio by my brother, Joshua Simmons. Joshua, what's going on?
It's going great, man. Just springtime. We love springtime. Hopefully, as everybody's listening to this, I've landed a smallie or two by now.
I hope you have as well.
For sure. Surely it's happened. We've done some fishing. Maybe we'll even talk about that fishing when you get back from your trip. At this point, you are back. Well, we'll be able to hear about it.
We're recording this a little early.
Yeah, we're getting this editing. So you can be with your family. You don't have to do any editing while you're going.
That's the goal.
Just a couple things to tell everybody. First of all, we want to thank everybody for listening as always. Today's episode, man, I saw our buddy Andrew from Bluffline Media. He put out this video about fly fishing Minnesota. And this story just really resonated with me, so I really want to say thank you to Andrew for putting that video together. If you haven't seen it, it's linked in the show notes today. Go check it out. And want to just say thanks to Lance from Root River Rod Company for joining us today. Such a cool what they got going on. What we found out was a super small town, and they got the only fly shop in town, man.
Yeah, it's really cool. Lance has got a great story. So we got Lance Prado on the show today, for as Joshua said, from Root River Rod Co. in Lanesboro, Minnesota. So Lanesboro. Southeast Minnesota. And Lance is going to tell us a lot about the Driftless region. He's the first guest we've had from the Driftless area, and teaching a lot about what I learned through this episode is an amazing area for fly fishing. It's interesting to me, Joshua, as I was thinking about this as we had the conversation with him. You know, I think sometimes, especially for our anglers that live here in the near the East Coast, we think, you know, when we want to go destination trout fishing, we automatically think out west. Like, we think the Montanas and the the Wyomings and Colorados and those areas. But it sounds like in some ways we fly right over a really great gem of a resource. So this was really cool to hear about the Driftless area and catching some awesome fish in that area in an amazing season, and just learning why it's called the Driftless, really, and why it's so important. And so Lance kind of gets into that a little bit in today's episode. And he's got a really cool story, too, of how his family came to be a part of this fly shop. And it's a story that rang true with us, as it's a story where, you know, our own dad has fought cancer, and we've been able to continue to enjoy our time with him and learn a little bit, learn still a lot from him, and hearing Lance and his wife's story of how they were able to become a part of the Root River Rod Co. is really special. And so I really appreciate him taking the time to share that story with us.
For sure, man. Thanks again, guys, for listening. As always, we keep saying this every week. I want the feedback, man. Tell me where to go for the party. I'm just going to keep throwing it out there until the 40th party's booked.
Until it's booked.
Until it's booked, we're going to keep asking for advice, tips, tricks. Right now, it's looking like just you and I, man, which is always a good time.
We'll have a blast.
We're going to do a full series of podcast episodes. I'm excited. It's going to be full time. It's going to be fun. But thanks, guys, to listen as always. Thanks to Lance for joining us. Make sure to check him out at Root River Rod Co. Online and on their social medias. And guys, if you're not out right now in the spring, give us a shout if you're coming this way. Got a lot of cool fishing trips planned in April, including the retreat. And then we're going to do some fishing down in a little area we like. Won't say that yet. We're going to probably do some episodes down there. Big family reunion. Might even have some special Simmons family guest from the original grandfather.
From our mom's side.
Well, yeah, who kind of got everybody into fishing, right? Yeah, so yeah, sure. That might be pretty cool, and we'll do some of that. But looking forward to those. So we will be down in the Blue Ridge, Georgia area. First weekend in April. So if you're down that way, shoot us an Instagram message. You may find us on the river somewhere. Tell us where to fish, or you know, we just might hang out. We might go down and see our buddies down there that have the little shop downtown.
Absolutely.
So thanks, guys. Appreciate you for what you do out there. Hope you're getting out with your kids as the springtime comes and get out on the water.
Yeah, man. This is a great time to be outside and get that extra daylight now that time has changed. And so hopefully you can get some time out on the water, and especially some intentional time with your family. All right. Well, that's it for us. Let's dive in now to our conversation with Mr. Lance Prado of Root River Rod Company.
All right, man. We want to welcome to the show tonight, I think maybe our first guest, Caleb, from Minnesota.
think so.
Is that correct?
I think you're right.
Yeah, our first guest from Minnesota, Mr. Lance Prado of Root River Rod Company, or Root River Rod Co. So we thank you for joining us tonight, Lance. We're going to tell everybody, you know, kind of how we kind of connected, but appreciate you hanging out with us tonight, buddy.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, Lance, we're stoked to hear a little bit more about your story. As Josh said, we saw a little bit about your story in a video put out by Bluffline Media on their Fly Fishing America series.
And, yeah, from our buddy Andrew.
From our buddy Andrew, who's been on the show before, and who highlights like different states throughout the U.S., and he highlighted Minnesota, and he talked about you guys and your story down there in Lanesboro in the Driftless region. So, but before we get into all that, Lance, we'd love to just hear a little bit about your own story of getting into fly fishing. What was that like for you? When did you get a fly rod in your hands for the first time, and what made you kind of fall in love with it?
I was pretty young when I picked up a fly rod. I think I was 13, 14 years old. And so I grew up in Minnesota on Lake Minnetonka, which is a really popular area. So fishing out my back door was like something I did ever since day one. And, yeah, I think it was 13 or 14. I picked up a fly rod and just started targeting bass and sunnies right off my dock. And, kind of on and off fly rod or fly fishing since then. And then probably the last decade has like strictly only fly fishing. Every species I target is like on the fly. So.
Yeah, man. I feel like we've kind of done that same thing in the last decade. We don't throw many spin tackles anymore. We have a lot of friends that do, and we appreciate them and want to keep hanging out with them and tell them to come fishing with us. But that's kind of not our thing anymore. We kind of consider if we can do it on the fly. And, you know, my son loves sunnies as well. Never heard it referred to as that, but definitely that's a cool way to look at it because he loves a good tug from a sunfish. That's a fun way to get started for kids for sure. So tell us about what kind of brought you to the place you are now. I know that may be a big question, so I'm going to have to break it down. But what led from you just loving fly fishing to what you're doing now?
So Steve, who was the former owner of Root River Rod Co., he was my neighbor, basically. And he actually showed me how to fly fish back in the day. And then so went on and off, and then the Driftless area, which is about two and a half hours from where I grew up, southeast. And after high school, I moved to Colorado. And then after a couple of years of college, me and his daughter started dating. And then after college, moved back to Minnesota, and we had our first child, and then lived up in Minnetonka. And just always fished, always kept fishing. And then we were actually down in Lanesboro camping, saw the fly shop for sale. It wasn't a fly shop yet, actually, but we were eating dinner, saw the shop for sale, just looked at each other, like, that'd be a sweet little fly shop. It's a cool town. And went back up, talked to Elena's dad about it, and then it was like a month later or so. He's like, we bought that shop in Lanesboro and I'm retiring. It's going to be my working retirement. And we were like, no way.
That's wild.
So I guess I'll backstep then to give a little insight on Steve. Steve was a Finnish carpenter for 30 plus years owning his own business. So he knew how to run a business and how to deal with all that. And then he's also been fly fishing since he was pretty much a kid growing up in New York, fishing for steelhead, like Niagara Falls area. And so then before he opened, it was probably another decade or so, probably more than that, probably two decades of refurbishing bamboo rods and, you know, started making bamboo rods. And then so when we told him about the shop, he retired from woodworking, and then he just wanted a place to where he could build bamboo rods was his thing. So that was like his old drive behind it, and then it just kind of evolved from a little shop of building bamboo rods to a full-fledged fly shop, guides, all the gear you could get. So it's kind of cool how it just came from a thought and then happened very quickly.
Well, a couple of questions coming out of that, Lance. First of all, kind of cool that your mentor in fly fishing introduces you to his daughter and you end up marrying into like this fly fishing family. That's kind of cool. I mean, that's just neat. That's got to be a pretty cool part of your story.
Yeah, I mean, because my family was definitely not fly fishing family. I was actually born in Texas, so all my family members are like Texans.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Minnesota when I was like a baby. So just conventional catch and keep everything.
Yeah.
And then so, fly fishing was like, I mean, even still, my relatives are just have no clue how it works.
For sure. So, man, that's just neat. I don't know. I just find that so cool that the guy that was teaching you how to do this, kind of raising you up, he ends up becoming your father-in-law. So, tight, got to be a tight-knit family there with your in-laws. That's pretty special.
Yeah, we were, all really close. I mean, we just known each other for so long and kind of been through a lot together, so we all were close, so.
That's really cool, man. And then, so I love, and I just love that. Like you're on a trip and you're eating dinner and you see the shop, and then he just, so like, was this out of the blue? Like he calls you a month later and is like, "Hey man, this is what we're gonna do. This is what I'm gonna do."
So it's funny because so the reason that me and his daughter went down there to go camping and fishing because me and him went the weekend before and we came down and I caught a bunch of fish and camped and I went back and I told her how sweet it was and she's like, well, you gotta take me now. So then we went. So I mean, he's been fishing this area for like 30 years, so he knows like all the stuff. But yeah, so then when we told him about it and then the like yeah, a month later they came over just for dinner, like normal night, whatever, hang out with the kid and just Steve just, yeah, we bought that shop and we're going for
That's awesome. So cool.
Too cool, man. Well, tell everyone for, maybe who doesn't know, Lanesboro is man, is it really close to anything? I don't know. Like I was trying to kind of Google map it, but what would be
No.
yeah.
No. It's not it's so Rochester is the closest big city and that is 45 minutes north of us. So Lanesboro is like a small tourist town with 750 people in it. So it's really little. It's the smallest town I ever lived in. So it was really kind of a culture shock to move down here. And we did that and we did that in 2020. Yeah, it's right in the middle of the Driftless. So like I literally when I drive to work, which is the fly shop, which is 3/4 of a mile away from my house,
Nice.
I follow a river the whole way and every morning or evening I can stop at the river halfway to work and catch a bunch of trout in like 15 minutes and then make my way to the shop. Or if I'm at the shop and I have another person working with me, we can tie some flies and get creative and then literally walk across downtown street to the river and test them out for trout. So it's pretty sweet.
Sounds like a sweet life for sure, man. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
That's I'm jealous. I am very jealous. So, Lanesboro, it's there in the middle of, as you said, the Driftless region. For folks who maybe don't know who are listening to this and don't know exactly about that area, what makes the Driftless so special? Like, why is it such a great place to fish? I mean, obviously, if you can walk 15 minutes from your, from your place of work and catch tons of fish, or excuse me, and catch tons of fish in 15 minutes. I mean, that's a pretty sweet deal. So,
yeah.
What makes the Driftless so special?
I'll just kind of give you a rundown on what the Driftless even is.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So the Driftless region is like Southeast Minnesota, Southwest Wisconsin, Northeast Iowa, and a touch of like Northwest Illinois. So basically it's a region where the glaciers kind of slid around it and didn't carve anything flat. So that's why Minnesota has so many lakes, because the glaciers carved all that out and then melted and created, you know, the land of 10,000 lakes is what we're in. But it missed Southeast Minnesota. So Fillmore County, where I live, is like one of two counties, I think, that doesn't have a lake in it in all of Minnesota. And so here it's all natural bluffs, big limestone cliffs, and every creek is spring fed. There's no reservoirs or anything. It's all spring fed, all comes out of the ground. And a lot of it comes out of caves, which is cool. So you can literally, the same stream I fish in next to my shop where it's big enough where I can float a drift boat down, I can go drive a half hour up to the headwaters of it and fish it where it comes out of the cave, out of the ground.
Wow.
So it's pretty amazing to see all that. And there's, of course, on YouTube, you can watch a whole lot of documentaries, but there's like underground caves that are like stay freezing cold all year round. And I guess that's what Native Americans would use to like refrigerate deer and other animals they would kill to like make them last longer. So like you have to wear like a jacket going into some of these caves because it's so cold.
That's really cool, man. So, so you got that section there near you now, and it's all over. So, I mean, we're talking tons of water there in the Driftless, right? Like tons of rivers, tons of stretches. Like you said, you've got one that's floatable right near you. There's a lot of wadeable rivers there as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So the wadeable rivers, there's like more wadeable rivers with trout in them than I can fish in my entire lifetime.
Wow.
I could hit a new river every day. I mean, they're creeks. I mean, not really rivers, but all spring fed. Some of them aren't named. A ton of them aren't even on the map. A lot of them are on private property. And, you know, there's even some that come out of the ground. You can fish brook trout and then go back into the ground. And, you know, it's completely private to get to that. Like, so that one will never be fished, you know, unless that landowner just sells to someone, but that one would be one that would never be possible for anyone to fish unless you know the landowner. And there's a ton like that. So literally it's like more water than you can fish, and it's crazy. And there's like decent fish here too, like decent size. Like yesterday I caught a 21 inch brown. So there's some good fish out there.
Now all your fish, are they so in the Driftless region, are those, and around you, are they wild fish? Have they been put in and then they've reproduced, or does it vary from based on river?
Yeah, so it varies, but so our native trout species is the brook trout, which are getting harder to find because the trout they introduced here a long time ago are kind of taking over the brown trout. So the most, like 99% of the brown trout in the Driftless are wild, natural reproducing brown trout. And then there's a bunch of streams they also stock rainbow trout in, but the rainbow trout here don't reproduce for some reason. So, I mean, there's streams where you can catch a brown trout, rainbow trout, and a brook trout, you know, all in the same stretch, but most of the fish here are brown trout is what you're going to find.
Super cool, man. I mean, I'm just sitting here talking to you, Lance, and Josh and I are both pulling up trout routes and like looking at all the creeks right there in Southeast Minnesota. And it's insane. I mean, just looking at all the, like, you know, class one streams that are in that area, you know, as far as like how trout routes kind of classifies them, and being able to see all that water right there. I mean, that's really cool. I mean, being able to go, well, our favorite thing to do is go check out new places. And so, being able to do something like that right there has got to be a real treasure, right there in your backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, Trout Routes doesn't even do it justice. I mean, Trout Routes does a great job, but I mean, like when you get here, you're like really mind blown because like DNR maps, Trout Routes can't even keep up with all the rivers here. And they're adding, I think they add 7 to 10 new easements each year and like 5 new streams each year. So our DNR map hasn't been made since 2021 updated. So like even in that map book, you still couldn't fish every stream in there. So it's, I mean, it's crazy. That's what they're doing.
That's crazy, man. So, what, you know, as a fly shop owner, and I think you do get to guide some still too, or is that a split? What's it like to be a fly shop? Obviously, it's a great commute to work. We know that much already. That part's already been covered. But, you know, on the other side of fly shop owner, I know that we've had different fly shop owners on the show, and it can be stressful, and there's different parts of the business. But are you still able to guide some as well as also run your shop?
Yeah. I will say I do guide. I only do the float trips is all I want to do. But we offer wade trips obviously too. So I guide and I have a list of returning clients that I've kind of narrowed down to like a select few that I want to take out. And we've kind of bonded over the years, since I started guiding like 8+ years ago. So it's great because, you know, it's kind of a break from the shop. Owning the shop is stressful, but most of the time it's great. It doesn't feel like going to work, which is good. So there are stressful times, but so when I get stressed out, it's nice to have that break guiding because then these clients that I take out don't feel like it. Guiding at all. I'm just rowing a boat and I tie on some flies for them and they've been with me a bunch of times and know the stretches pretty well. So I don't even have to call out shots. And so it's good. It's like a day off kind of, but you get paid.
That's always nice. I mean, that's a thing for sure. So Joshua and I, we float some, here in Western North Carolina, some of the tailwaters and different streams like that. And that's one of the things that we've really enjoyed, or I don't want to speak for Joshua, I know I have. There's something really fun about taking people out, especially that know what they're doing. You know, I enjoy taking new people out too, who are just learning the sport for the first time. But just being on the sticks, trying, I don't know, in some ways I find as much joy, and I'd love for you to speak to this. I love catching fish, don't get me wrong. Like, I'll catch trout all day long and have a blast doing it. But there's something too really enjoyable about getting that boat line just right, getting them set up for that perfect shot, telling them where to take it. They follow your advice and they hook a fish. I mean, that's something I really enjoy doing. I don't know if that's kind of why you love the float trip so much, but would love for you to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I like. Exactly what I like about it is like, you know, like after you do it for so many years and know all the water so well, you can just like call out a shot and be like, there's going to be a fish here guaranteed. And just like they follow along, they execute, make a great, great shot and they catch a fish. And it just like, it's so rewarding. And then, you know, and then plus floating, the rivers here change dramatically with the rainfall. So like right now the river's super low, but you know, we could get like 6 inches of rain and all of a sudden the river's super high and kind of raging, and it's kind of different every time, you know, depending on the weather and how things are. So it's nice, and I like it because you can also always find fish for me, at least in the boat. I feel like I can always put people on fish in the boat, as to where waiting is a little bit tougher here.
Yeah, when you're finding those fish, what does it look like in your area? You know, do you guys get a lot of dry fly action, streamer action, or is it are we nymph rigs, or is it a combination when you're out in that area? Obviously, we've never fished it. Don't know. I think it's probably one of those places that maybe gets overlooked sometimes in the fly fishing community, talking about destinations and stuff. But what does the fishing look like there from a technical standpoint?
We get everything. Like yesterday, I floated and I literally caught fish on big articulated streamers. I caught fish on nymphing, and then a stonefly hatch happened, so we caught a couple of fish up on top on drives, throwing a like size 14 black stonefly. So like literally from now, which is mid-March through April, May, and June, you can fish all three really well, and we get really good hatches through those months. And then July, August, September, you can fish hoppers. And I would say the hopper fishing here is probably the best thing to do, because all our creeks are small, so we get like tall overgrown grass, and literally there's hoppers everywhere, so you can just see these big browns just come out from nowhere and crush a hopper, which is fun.
That's pretty awesome. And when you say smallish creeks, those are, I mean, for us, we fish in pretty tight streams in the mountains. So what's a small creek?
You can fish anything from, you know, a foot wide to 30 feet wide. So I would say the majority of our creeks are probably, you know, like 6 or 8 feet wide to like 12 feet wide. So like, I will say the Driftless will sharpen your skills on casting and being accurate for sure.
That's pretty cool, man. Do you have a certain favorite method of yours when you're maybe not guiding? I know when you're guiding, you're trying to get people to be successful, but maybe when it's just Lance fishing, you have a certain season or a certain type of technique that you like more than the rest of them.
Yeah, I'm a spring streamer guy. I will say that. I like spring. I like, you know, like usually we have snow right now, but it's been a really weird dry year. So like the spring runoff is when I like to throw huge streamers. But otherwise I'll fish it all. I'll fish tiny trichos. I'll fish hoppers. I'll fish nymphs. But yeah, streamers is kind of what I like to do. I just like seeing the aggressive take.
Yeah, man, that's, I love the streamer fish. Matter of fact, we've gotten a lot into smallie fishing here in Western North Carolina in the last couple of years because of that exact thing, watching those smallies come out and attack a articulated streamer or something like that. Now, is what you guys are chasing up there, is it always trout, or y'all get some smallie action up there as well?
No. So we have a couple secret rivers where you can catch brown trout in the morning, smallies in the midday, and then a muskie in the afternoon.
Oh, wow.
On the same stretch.
Slam. Yeah, that's like making incredible. Your own slam.
Yeah, but the stretches I guide, you can do, I have stretches where you can do all trout, catch rainbow trout and brown trout, or you can do a half day of brown trout and a half day of smallies basically in the same float. So depending on the year, like when it's really hot, like my morning, I'll get people to go out early morning, we'll catch all trout, and then as soon as the sun gets up around like 11 and noon, we switch over to like smallie tactics, and we'll just catch a buttload of smallmouth. So and then also we can do pike and walleye and stuff. Like last year, one of our clients, he caught like a 27-inch walleye, kind of a bycatch while we're fishing. Wow. For smallies.
That's really cool. That, Josh, it sounds like we got to make our way down up to Southeast Minnesota for sure.
I mean, it sounds like a great spot for an angler to kind of do it all, for sure. If somebody was coming, Lance, what is you know, I guess you probably don't, 750 people, probably not a huge, probably not a lot of extracurriculars, which is probably great for people like us because we just want to come fish.
So,
But what makes it special? Because you did say it's kind of a tourist area, people come through.
Yeah, so the what kind of drives our town is not fly fishing, which is hilarious because, like, they don't realize how good we have it. what drives our town is a bike trail. It's the Root River State Trail, and I think it's 70 miles of paved trail that follows the Root River. And you can kind of hop between these little tiny towns like the one I live in and stop every 7 miles or so in a little town and get, like, ice cream or food or stop at a brewery. But yeah, basically the bike trail drives this town, and then we have tubers and kayakers and canoe people who like to do canoeing also coming here. So our town, like, when the fly shop opened, like, they're like, oh, some high-end fly shops coming into town. They're gonna, it's like hilarious, but it's they didn't even, like, realize, like, how good they had it, like, in the, literally their backyard.
Wow.
So, but yeah, the biking is the big one that drives the town, and then just camping, all that stuff, being outdoors. There's a lot of stuff. Lanesboro was named, like, bed and breakfast capital of Minnesota.
Gotcha.
So there used to be, like, a ton of bed and breakfasts here, but they're all kind of turning to Airbnbs. So that's kind of what drives it.
For sure. So, Lance, let's get into a little bit more of the story of the fly shop. So we heard a little bit about this story through the video that you were on with Bluffline Media. We'll link that in the show notes for people that want to go learn a little bit more about fly fishing Minnesota and about the Lanesboro area. Tell us a little bit about how you guys came to own the shop, because you told us, you know, Steve bought the old shop that was there. He set it up as a place to build rods, and then now you and your wife and your family are there running it as well. So when did y'all come on board at the shop, and how's it all kind of happen?
So we were, like, traveling. I'll just kind of start from sort of the beginning. So we were traveling in 2019 and came up here to help Steve with the Fly Fishing Expo, which is actually this weekend. I'm not sure when this podcast come out, but it's March 15th. So we came up here 2019, this very week, and helped Steve with that. And then, you know, 2020, and then COVID hit basically that same week and shut everything down. Wow. So we literally were, like, stuck here. And so we lived here for a year above the fly shop. There's two apartments above there. So we lived above the fly shop for a year, and then Steve was diagnosed with cancer. And so after Steve was diagnosed with cancer, that's when, like, serious talk started coming about us taking over and all of that. So me and his daughter Elena bought the fly shop from him. And we just wanted to take stress off of him and try and help him focus on his health and do what he could to stay healthy and beat this cancer. And then basically 11 months after he was diagnosed, he passed, and it was just seemed like a blink of an eye. It went so quick, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, we actually have a real business in our lap that we need to make work to support our family and do all that. So you know, like, when it first, after, like, the first couple of years, there was always just, like, you know, that, like, sort of, I don't even know, side talk, like, yeah, you guys could take it over one day or whatever. But yeah, when he was diagnosed with cancer, it literally just, like, became so real so fast. And it was like, had to learn, like, to the business side of stuff, more of the business side. Basically, you know, all the ordering, all the finances, paying employees, paying your guides, paying taxes. basically all that you had to learn super quick. And that's kind of how it came about. And it's been 2 years now since we've had it, and I couldn't be happier that we have it, except for the fact that we wish we had Steve with us to help us along with it. But yeah, it's been great.
I think that story really, you know, your wife speaks so eloquently on the video. Big plug to her for doing such a great job, and how Andrew told that story. You know, she in her own right seemed to be quite the angler. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Obviously came from dad, yeah. Right?
Yeah, she is good. she's good for sure. If she went out more, she'd be like the best, but she's really good. I mean, she's, but she's, you know, she's the mother, and she takes care of the family and takes care of the kids. So she doesn't get out as much as I do, but when she does, she just crushes it and just flawless cast and all that stuff. But, yeah, I will say people should check out that video by Andrew Bluffline Media. She tells a way better story than I do, but, she's just busy with the kids right now, putting them to bed.
We understand that world. Absolutely. So Lance, what is it, you know, obviously, hey, you had to go through what you had to go through in order to kind of take over this fly shop. But what does it mean to you and your family to kind of be carrying on Steve's legacy, I guess? I mean, it's something he started as a kind of a labor of love. And now you and your family are continuing that on.
It's great. It's like, it really shows you that something like that just is more than just a tool to make money, and more of just like, it's like, I mean, literally it's like, I'll go in there with my daughter. She'll like run the cash register and want to do this. And she's always coming up with ideas. So it's like, you know, immediately you get those thoughts in your head, like, well, if I just do this and then she can have it one day, you know, it's like, it's like, you know, just kind of more to it than just making money. And I don't know. It's crazy. It's, yeah.
That's really special. So it's, you know, very truly a family business. It sounds like, you, your wife, you said your daughter's in there. She's how old? She's like running the register.
She just turned 11 this week.
So she's 11. She's in the shop. She could probably run half the stuff technology wise better than we can here.
Yeah.
She can. That's crazy, right? And then you've got another child as well. It's a son.
Yes. I have a son who's a year and a half. His name is Finn.
Finn.
And yeah.
So what's it like? I just love to get, we love to get dads on here and speak to this. What's it like kind of raising them in this outdoor community and in this fly fishing life? What's that been like for you?
It's like the best thing ever. So my Elena, she is like an outdoor educator, basically. She works with, this place up the road called Eagle Bluff and Environmental Learning Center, and she works there and helps kids just get outside. That's all she wants to do, is just be outside with kids all day long. So her background is early hood child education. So, what she's learned, she thinks, outdoors is the best teacher. So having our own children and bringing them out fly fishing, like, just, it really shows them everything, patience, being able to learn biology, entomology, all of that stuff. And, yeah, it's great. And it's also another one of those things that's like larger than just going and running in the woods. Your kids are really learning something. So, we think it's really special to have that. And I also will say there is a little kitty corner in my fly shop for my 1.5 year old, and there's like a to sit down, and he sits there and plays. And but yeah, it's great.
So we asked all of our guests this question. Sounds like everybody in your family can fly fish, as we would assume. But
yes.
What is your your tips or some tricks maybe in taking younger children fly fishing, and what does that look like for you guys?
I would say pack a ton of snacks for sure. Snacks is key for us getting my kid out, but and then also don't only bring like snacks, and don't only make it about like fly fishing. We'll bring paint and paper and stuff, and like just use like the river water and do like watercolor painting and stuff. Find like some aspen trees and like paint on the bark of that and stuff. And also fly fishing, and then also they don't want to paint anymore. They want to grab the rod and make casts, and try and make it more fun, and then have no expectation, and don't be like, we're going to be out there for 8 hours, you have to do this. just go out there, and if it goes for a half hour, that's great. If it goes for 3 hours, that's also great. So that's kind of my little tip.
It's a great tip. It's that first tip is one we hear a lot. I think we're just eventually going to just market that statement, because that's what everybody tells us.
Yeah.
Take kids fishing, make sure you have snacks. But yeah, man, it's really cool that you're able to do that in this outdoor space right there in your backyard. I think probably some things that your kids are learning from you being in an outdoor space, you may not even realize until they get older how much they've understood or how much they're taking in. From being able to be around the business like that with the family. And that speaks to, what you guys are trying to do there. Before we kind of wrap all this up, we wanted to give you a chance to just tell anybody, somebody hears this and says, hey, I want to go fish there. It sounds pretty fun. For us driving, it's about 14 hours. So break it up a little bit and find some different places. But what does it look like to travel to that area? Obviously, there's plenty of places to stay, and you can do some biking and some canoeing and all that other kind of stuff. But what's your best kind of travel way to get there if you were having to fly in?
For us, we don't mind driving, so we will drive to Minneapolis St. Paul Airport, which is 2 hours away from our door. You could do that, fly into Minneapolis, which is really easy. That will have a direct flight anywhere. And if you don't want to do that driving, it's a short little half hour plane ride to Rochester, Minnesota. And then from there, we're only 45 minutes to an hour from Rochester. If you want to save an hour of driving, but for us, it's easier with kids to fly into Minneapolis and then just get in the car and drive instead of hopping on one more plane.
For sure.
There is a ton of places to stay in town, and summertime is obviously the best time to come. And I would say the best fishing months is May and June. If you just want to do all around fishing, streamers, nymphing, dry flies, that's when we have the best hatches.
That's great, man. So Lance, if people want to come check you out and check out the shop, what's the best place maybe for them to do that? Maybe online. You guys online, can they check out the shop online? Is there social media, stuff like that? Where can they find you?
Oh, yeah. We have it all. You can check out our website, rootriverrodco.com. Our Instagram is rootriverrodco. Our Facebook's rootriverrodco. And our YouTube channel, we have a YouTube channel, rootriverrodco, that We will do like fly tying videos on that, and like flies of the month kind of sort of thing. A little bit of fishing on there too, kind of showcasing what we have. It's not a very big channel, but it's just one I play around with. And then we also have TikTok for the young ones. and that's just Root River Rodco. Yeah, pretty much all the social media were on it, but those four or five are what we are mostly on.
I did want to bring this up, and I think I missed it, but your shop's name is Root River Rod Co. And I know at some point, are you guys still building some rods, or are you mainly just? I noticed on your website you sell some bamboo fly rods, even like some pretty like rare finds. Is that kind of a thing that you guys are into?
Yeah, I forgot to mention that too. So we still kind of wheel and deal with vintage bamboo rods, collector bamboo rods, and then also collectible reels, fly reels, vintage reels, old Hardys and Orvis and stuff like that. And then I myself am building bamboo rods. I'm still in a process of learning, so I'm not taking orders on custom rods yet, but in the future I will be taking orders for custom bamboo rods. But that's one thing Steve left that everybody really loves is like the bamboo rods. So building those is kind of a super art form that's not very popular at all.
Yeah, for sure. We've talked to a couple of rod builders and learned that exact thing. And I just think it's so cool that you're continuing Steve's passion in that, especially with the vintage rods and reels, and now you're learning how to build them yourself. And hopefully people are going to be able to get some hands on them in the future for sure. Well, Lance, this has been wonderful, man. Thank you for your time tonight and sharing a little bit about Root River Rod Co. and all about the Driftless. I've learned a lot about that area, and it's definitely, Joshua, been something that I'd love to go check out one day.
Yeah, it seems like a really cool spot, man, just with a lot of variety and just so much water. We get that a lot here. Sometimes our water's a little harder to access, kind of like you were saying in some places too, but it seems like there's such an opportunity for the angler there. And what a great little spot you got, man. Such a cool little town.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on, and hopefully you guys can make it up, and then anybody else that comes up, we will be happy to guide you or point you in the right direction of where to go and catch some fish.
For sure, man. Well, Lance, thank you. And thanks for hanging out with us tonight. And thanks, everyone, for checking out this episode of the Dads on Fly podcast. And until next time, tight lines. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dads on Fly podcast. We hope this conversation has inspired or encouraged you as a parent or an angler.
To learn more about Dads on the Fly, you can find us at dadsonthefly.com or at Instagram or Facebook at Dads on the Fly.
Yeah, we'd always love it if you leave us a rating or review, as it helps get our word out about the podcast. And if you like this episode, make sure to shoot a message and share it with a friend.